Welcome to the Minivate Gang podcast. This is Steve Borsch. This is episode 110, and I am on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, we're grooving down here in Lakeville.
Graham Thickens.
That's too funky for me this early.
It is funky. Yeah, it is. Phil Wilson.
It's a kind of a it's kind of a funky hip hoppy kind of thing. I like it. I'm gonna let you finish, but I want to let you know that I think my girl Beyonce.
Yeah. There you go.
Actually, it was nice. I liked it.
It was very nice. I like that. It's usually kind of a bluesy thing going on. So I like that.
Well, I'm trying to mix it up a little bit. So yeah, I don't want you guys to get bored.
Very eclectic taste.
Maybe next week we could do some gangster rap.
If you find it on Music Alley, I'd be happy to put that in. So you go troll in some of the playlists and see what we can come up with. So big week with Google. So what's going on with those boys? I know that you Android users, Tim and Phil, have you guys taken advantage of their new Android web store, app store?
Yeah, well, it's always been, the market's always been on the phone.
The app market, yeah.
Yeah, but now it's they have one online too, akin to iTunes, so you can browse and find stuff easier. But it's always been on the phone itself, the market.
So I haven't downloaded any new apps because of it.
Okay.
Yeah, but, I mean it doesn't seem like a big deal to me.
I mean, is it a better management with the web, or doesn't it really matter? Is it just easier to maybe find?
I think that's what they bill it as. And, you know, one of the things that's interesting about Android that I don't think they have for iOS is that every place that you find an Android app, usually the developer has a QR code next to it. Uh-huh. And so you just scan it with your phone and it takes you immediately to the download in the market for that app.
Are you able to do that on the screen?
Yeah. Yeah, so I do it all the time.
Okay.
So I see it in a web browser and just hold it up to the computer with barcode scanner and it pops up right on my phone. Well, ready to download.
So yesterday they released the Chrome web store. And for those of you who are using Chrome, you can go in and take a look at it and it lets you download apps. And I went in and I loaded a bunch of them last night because it just got announced yesterday. And some of them are just bizarre. I mean, they're identical to the web page. Like there's a Gmail app and you click on that and it loads Gmail in the browser exactly as though you went to the URL. And so some of them are a little strange, but some are really nice, like a Posterous one, and there's a Bitly link one, but it just pulls up the web app and I can really see that this is directionally is going to be their tablet play. That's really what this is ultimately all about. Would you guys agree?
Sure. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting is they have Chrome OS, which is basically, you know, a Chrome browser, and that's all you have. That's your OS. and then Android, and it's kind of confusing, I think, that you've got the Android market with dedicated apps, and then you've got this Chrome web store thing, which are basically just web pages and links to them as apps. And I think a lot of users are going to be confused, you know, which one is which and why they don't cross over, you know, particularly when this Atrix phone gets out from Motorola, which is kind of a mashup of Android plus Linux. And it's a smartphone, yet it's a laptop at the same time.
Yeah, that would be pricey. Confusing. Did you see what they're going to charge for that thing? And
it's $200 on contract, but all the accessories are expensive. Yeah,
well, yeah, that laptop dock is $499, but they're going to sell you both for $499, I guess, when it comes out later in February.
That'll be interesting. I think that's it's a great product idea, and probably it'll either fail big or it will be, you know, the wave of the future.
But don't you think that this is going to really open up the space for people who want to maybe develop HTML5 based apps in a browser?
Yeah, no, I think that's a positive. And it reminds me of the early days of the iPhone where everything, you know, Steve Jobs tried to talk everyone into the, you know, the web apps. And then that was before app apps happened. And, you know, you could do an awful lot. And there was some great web apps that were created at that time. And same thing can be done now, particularly on the desktop, where you've got a little more horsepower. So yeah, and I think there's going to be some interesting web apps, but I don't believe that the app days are over. I think that's still, you know, that's still a huge deal, and it's not going to change anytime soon.
Well, yep. I think that you're spot on with your characterization of this being something that's confusing. Because it was interesting to watch a thread. We've got relatives out in Seattle who were eager for the iPhone to come out on Verizon, and the daughter is still on the fence, and the dad went out and bought a Droid for Verizon. And just to watch him go through the process of trying to figure out what he can do and where he can go to get apps and all this stuff is coming out, and he's just not sure what he can take advantage of and what he can't. And at least thematically, when I look at the App Store, you have iPhone and iPad apps in there, but also the Mac App Store, you know, thematically it's the same. And mm-hmm. So, you know, if you know how to use one, you're going to be comfortable using the other.
Well, one other thing is that, you know, Apple continues to upgrade their installed base of devices too. So if you're a user, and even if you have an older, you know, iPhone, except for the first one, but if you've got a 3G or higher, you can upgrade to the latest and greatest. That's not the same as on Android, where you're at the mercy of the carrier and the manufacturer, and a lot of them are marooned back on, you know, really old versions of Android, which can't run some of the latest apps. So that's whole fragmentation is a real problem. And I think it's one that will get worked out over time. But right now there's a lot of Android phones that have, you know, the version 1.x of Android on them. And a lot of the new apps, you can't run it. You need 2.0, you know.
So let me ask you this. One of the things that's been interesting is... thinking back again, and we talked about this last week a little bit, but the Wired magazine article about the web is dead and how apps potentially were going to kill the web because that would be the primary on-ramp for people. And that the beauty of the web itself and hyperlinking is I can send you guys a URL and you can all click on it and it pulls up that page in your particular web browser. And in theory, it's going to look the same on everybody's computer and different web browsers and so forth. But with an app, if I want to show you a particular piece of functionality, I have to do a screencast or screen grabs and then write about it because I can't send you a link to that particular spot in an app. Is that going to really present a problem? I mean, Phil, when you think about you wanting to share things with people and talk to people about specific social media things and so forth, is that a big deal, or is content going to be so portable that it's not going to matter?
It's hard to say. I mean, I think content is going to dictate, you know, what path it's going to take. I mean, you know, you're going to use different tools to share different content. I've yet to find that one thing that I like to use to share. And, you know, so what I do is just keep it to myself and don't tell anybody. So,
yeah. You know, sharing with those doggone clients, you don't want to do that. No.
So, yeah, I guess I'm going to wait to see how that all plays out. You know, it's an ever expanding technology and ever changing technology. So it's I'll wait to see. How's well, that Steve, for a nebulous answer, my friend?
Yeah, that was nebulous. Yeah, nebulous. Hey, Steve, you can shoot a picture of an app screen real easily on the iPhone and just email it to somebody.
Sure.
But that's not that's multiple steps, I guess.
It is multiple steps. Well, I've had a couple of instances where I wanted to show somebody akin to what I do with screencasting, where if I want to show someone, you know, five steps in a process, mm-hmm. maybe using two different apps or three different apps. I can't do that on an iPhone or on the iPad without, you know, pointing a camera at it and recording it. And it makes the the sharing process all that much harder.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Well, Mac OS for the desktop and laptop, it is still is going to be out there. Let's face it. Without the mobile isn't going to take away the need for that. That's for sure.
Well, so tell me, Steve, do you find yourself sharing more via your mobile or your desktop?
Well, I have to tell you that the tool that has been the most amazing tool that I've ever used is and I know there's multiple ones on the iPad, but there's a RSS reader called Feedler Pro. And the beauty of it is it syncs with my Google Reader. And as I'm going through my news feeds, if I see something that a client would need or one of you guys would need, potentially it would be of interest to you, I can literally just touch a button, pop it up, and I can email you the link, the article. I can send it to Twitter. I can send it to my Instapaper account or my Read It Later account, on and on and on. And it's become this really wonderful tool to be able to share and do so very easily and quickly versus like an in Google Reader experience where, you know, I can share it and I can email it and I can do some different things, but it's not as seamless and easy as it is using the iPad. And now I've begun using Feedler Pro on the iPhone, so I'm doing the same thing on the iPhone. The difference is I'd like to have a system-wide ability to do that. So regardless of where I am, I'd like that built into the operating system where, you know, if I'm in the New York Times app, I can send from in there. And if I'm, in the Feedler app, I can send from in there. If I'm on Safari, I can send from in there. And that would be, I think, of major benefit from a content sharing standpoint.
Yep. Good point.
So Phil.
Yes, sir.
How may I help event, you, sir? What event were you at? Was it yesterday or the day
yesterday,
before?
Yesterday. I was at the Java Meetup 612 or 612, Java JMU 612. It's just a small gathering. Happens at Urban Bean.
So this is Java as in coffee, not Java as in
coffee.
The,
yes. As in hanging yesterday. Okay. Joel Carlson, Erica Mayer put it together. It's just it's a gathering of about 60 people. It's been going on. It's like the first Thursday of every month at Urban Bean. So I was there yesterday and the topic was foodies and social media. So basically targeted at the food and restaurant, food bloggers, restaurant businesses, yep. That sort of thing.
Was so, Chris Lauer there?
Chris Lauer was not there yesterday, though I know he was following along on the tweets and things like that. So I did see some comments about that. So the reason we bring that up is that I wanted to talk a little bit about what is the state of social. My biggest concern yesterday was we spent a lot of time talking about couponing, talking about getting and retaining customers with couponing or those standard marketing ploys of getting butts in seats and bringing people in the door. And I got a little frustrated with the fact that, is that really what social media has become from a marketing standpoint? We are now falling back on the standard tried and true marketing techniques of discounting services and products. That's where I came down and I was kind of concerned and I wanted to find out your guys' thoughts. And I also wanted to bring in Rick Mond from Social Media Breakfast to talk a little bit about what is the state of social as it applies to marketing and brands. That's what I really wanted to talk about today. So,
okay.
Why don't we go ahead and get Rick on the phone and, chat with him and, we can get his vibe and discuss that. What do you think, Tim?
I don't think it's all just about promotion or about, getting people to trial your service. It's, there's quite a bit of interesting things going on still with customer support, especially with large organizations, which have been revolutionized via socials, particularly Twitter. And so I think that it's just one piece of what's going on with social, but there's a whole lot more going on out there. That maybe we think is old hat, but I don't think it is at all.
right, Groupon has just stole the thunder, you know, with all their hype and valuation craziness. And, you know, but it, as I've said before, it's a very expensive way for retailers or advertisers to get customers.
Rick, how are you doing this morning, man?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. Just fine. Good. How are you? Thanks for joining us on the podcast this morning. And if those of you that don't know, Rick Mann is the founder of the Social Media Breakfast and also a social media, I don't want to use the word expert because I think we all feel the same way about that, but a social media advocate and professional. How's that?
Advocate. That's a wonderful, wonderful title.
Okay, sounds
good. Enthusiast, right?
Enthusiast, as it were. But you work with a lot of companies as far as social media, talking about social media strategies, and I don't know if you what part you heard of my explanation to getting into this topic, but was it JMU 612 yesterday at Urban Bean, and they were talking about social media and foodies, and I felt like we spent an inordinate amount of time talking about Groupon and discounts and that sort of thing as you know, using social media to reach customers, and I'm feeling, I felt after that, like, holy crap, do we not listen anymore? Do we not talk to people via social media anymore? Are brands just going on and shoving coupons out or pimping their wares? So I thought I'd ask you, what do you see as the state of social right now?
You know, I think we're, not that we're at a crossroads, but I think we're at a point where some of our best social media advocates and enthusiasts, I hate using that word, but, you know, it's a descriptor. I think we've lost a little bit of focus in some ways on social media. And so I think a lot of things we've talked about for a lot of 2010, for example, was marketing. You know, Foursquare was a big hit, so location-based marketing, and now Groupon was also making great strides in 2010, as you were talking about. It's there's a lot of value to these services on top of our social networks, but I wonder if we haven't missed part of the real powerful pieces of social media that, you know, for example, are going on in Egypt this week. You know, just the sheer ability for people to connect and share in ways that were never possible before.
Has anybody set up a Foursquare for, you know, checking in at protests in Egypt or anything like that?
Yeah, that would be helpful.
I haven't today. Yeah,
probably not, but
mayor of the car burning.
Yeah, third rock from the corner.
Well, you know, and that's really kind of where I wanted to go with this is that sometimes we kind of have to step back from a marketing perspective and from a brand perspective and say, okay, what is social media really about? And it's not just another channel to advertise on.
Exactly. You know, if we look back on it, you know, go back 2-3 years, you know, social media was becoming a disruption in marketing as a disrupting force in communications, and people are doing it in different ways. And I think that's a great example, you know, the things that are going on over in the Middle East right now using the new technology and the social tools. It's disrupting the status quo of politics. And I think it's a great thing to see. I don't want to comment on the political part of it because we don't know where it's going to go. But I think just watching that natural discussion and people having a voice that didn't have couldn't get heard before.
Yep. Hey, did you happen to see that journalism startup called Storify got funding that's doing social media aggregation to help journalists write better stories? I'm going to find the link for that. That sounds pretty, cool. Pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, let me try to refocus that because I think that there's clearly an understanding of what we know social media can do from a social or political or, you know, person to person standpoint. But my concern was how brands are figuring out and services are figuring out ways to integrate with that. Are we, I see the problem as businesses still coming in with the same concept of, well, this is a stream for marketing. This is a way for me to pimp my wares. And that's all it is to it. You know, that's so just one more channel that I can broadcast on.
Well, you know, if I could interject, I've had some really remarkable experiences with Comcast, and you know that I have been a bit of a burr under their saddle, but the at Comcast Cares has not only been very helpful for me, but I had a fellow who's in his 70s across the street who was moving because his wife had Alzheimer's, and they're moving into a new place, and he was just tearing his hair out, his remaining hair, trying to figure out how to get his Comcast account shifted and the install done, and everybody's dancing around with him. And so I did an at Comcast Cares request, and when Frank Eliason was still there, and here comes back a DM, a connection, and one thing led to another, and he ended up having an executive, a VP, call him at home on a Saturday and said, "I'll take care of everything for you." And he called me, Marv called me and said, "Oh my God, Steve, I don't know how the hell you did that, but it was just amazing." So that was positive experience number two. Positive experience number one. Number two is, just bought an appliance at Sears, and they've got this robocalling survey thing, and it's just been harassing the hell out of me, and my wife has been harassed with emails, and an at my Sears is the way to get to the right people. And I got somebody helping me now get off this call list. And so, you know, rather than go to the store, rather than try to go to headquarters and try to wind your way to the senior VP of marketing or customer service or something, these channels are pushing, brands are pushing stuff on us, but we're also able to take advantage of deals, have new conduits for customer support and customer service. We're able to quickly get together with, you know, as a crowd and hammer on some company to get them to change their ways. I mean, I see really remarkable positives out of what's going on.
But do you see, I agree with you, but Rick, give us some examples of companies that are doing it right.
Oh, good grief. You know, there's so many that are, but there's more that aren't, and I'm afraid the good ones get lost in the mix. I haven't had a lot of great customer service experiences on social media, to be honest. So it's a few times I've reached out on social media to a couple different, service providers or entities. I've not had a great response. You know, it was almost like they weren't interested. So I know there's a lot of companies out there that they're not, walking the talk. They're just out there pretending. And I think that's part of the problem that we're starting to see is social media as an exercise is just another check mark on the to-do list. Companies that really want to, who have a history or culture of customer service are finding, hey, here's another channel that we can do that. And, you mentioned Sears is one, and obviously Comcast has done wonderful things, where they had the issues before, in the last several years. They've been, just a case study for this. But I personally, and it's kind of weird because I preach that. I truly believe that social media is a force for good for companies as well as individuals. And it's just amazing to me how many companies don't do it as well as they could.
Well, winding this back a little closer to home, Rick, what Best Buy has been doing has been fairly interesting. What do you think about kind of all of their social media activities?
I think it's pretty neat. I like watching, the new things that they try every quarter or every couple of months, just to see how they're trying to innovate and think of how else can we do this. Last year their 12 force, crowdsourcing their staff, the retail staff. It was just genius. It was a great new way of doing things, trying to give answers and help the customers. So I think Best Buy is one of those companies that really does get it, and they're trying to, even with the size, their size, they're trying to really be proactive and use it in a way that's beneficial for the customer. So it's nice to see a homegrown, company out there leading the pack, sort of.
Well, where did I want to go with this? Is when we talk about social media, does what we've is what we've always come to expect from customer service channels, from a lot of companies. It's considered social media. When I have a problem, you know, going to a support forum or filling out a trouble ticket, does that qualify as social media with that company? Is that a social outlet?
If we're put on our social media purist's hat, I'm not sure. But the reality of it is the social aspect, whether, you know, it's a traditional, you know, call line, you know, helpline, that it still is part of that mix. I think it is. It's pulled back around to that, to where we are today. I mean, if we just came out of the blue, you know, next week with, hey, making, you know, adding voice as a feature, you know, instead of it being something that we've used for 40 years, I think, yes, it would be, because it is one-on-one. You're able to talk to one individual connecting to another and helping them, sharing information. So it's just something we're so accustomed to having, we take it for granted, and we forget that it's a very powerful tool. You know, like right now we're seeing it, we're able to talk and back and forth from different parts of the metro here and have a great conversation. This is no different than, you know, sitting online on Twitter or IM or Facebook chat. So I think, yeah, that's definitely part of social. We just neglect it because it's old technology, if you will.
Well, you know, one of the things that I love is even going to a social media breakfast and following the hashtag as I'm driving along and having somebody say, oh, such and such a ramp is full, park in this other one. Or, you know, here's the door you need to use. I mean, it's stupid stuff like that. But, you know, it's a way to collectively be, you know, in connection with one another. And
should you really be doing that while you're driving, Steve?
Well, I use my nose because I have got gloves on. So it's really not a problem.
So that's not near as intrusive.
That's not. It slows me down.
Is, oh, boy. What happens if you have a cold, Steve?
It's bad. I carry a little cloth, though. Yeah.
Okay, so give me an example of what a company should do. Just one example. It doesn't need to be the complete strategy, but give me one example of something a company should do with social media and what a company should not do with social media.
The most powerful thing any company can do is just simply start listing. Just, you know, set up some, you know, some aggregation, some searches, some feeds into a reader or something, just Google searches or Bing searches, and just listen to the conversation. Pick out the things that people are saying. Start with, you know, the company name or brand name or product, and just start listening. And then you can start to see, you know, they're praising it or they're bashing you or whatever, and you can start to understand. Just starting to listen and really grasp what's going on, and not have a knee-jerk reaction if somebody says your product sucks, man. But listen to the why, you know, and then start to be able to formulate an engagement strategy of to be able to reach out to those people and say, hey, how can we make this better? Thank you for that positive review or something like that. Once you start listening and understand what your customer's actually saying when they don't think you're listening, it's a very powerful thing if you take it to heart, and any company can really build that into their product development strategy and really go back to what their corporate mission statement is.
Okay, what shouldn't they do?
What shouldn't they do? Don't just jump in and market. Setting up a Twitter channel and just sending out your news releases or links to your online ads or something, probably not the best way to go. I see that.
Gotcha.
And I'm not even
going to
try.
Gotcha. Well, listen, Rick, thanks very much. I just wanted to touch base with you and grab a quick update on what social is doing for business restore my faith in that we can actually make this work for business as well as people.
So Rick, when is the next social media breakfast?
Yes. The next breakfast is going to be February 28th. We should have our RCP page up pretty soon, probably today. It's going to be Valentine themed or relationship based. So, Valentine. It's our tagline this month.
Great.
Where did you say it was going to be, Rick?
We're going to be down at Vic's on the riverfront.
Oh, that's that's a great venue. Yeah, cool.
Except if you're Phil, you get a parking ticket.
But I was able to overcome that challenge, as you call.
I think we've got parking worked out in the parking ramp. Right.
You said that last time, too.
Well, if I remember right, there were validation tickets sitting there for everybody to take.
Yeah, I listened to you. Didn't work at a meter. Thanks, Rick. Take care of yourself, man.
Thanks, buddy.
You
podcast too. Today.
Thanks, guys.
See you later.
Yeah, thanks, Rick. Bye-bye.
So, well, listen, I appreciate you guys allowing me to just, touch base on, with somebody that services the brands with social media, because it's just, I walked away from that thinking, geez, really? Well, this is as far as we've come as yet. We're not now just couponing? Yeesh. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that, there are still some folks that are walking the walk of and talking the talk of social media. And that's good stuff. So, and I just don't, I also don't want social media to just to be the ability for us to publicly bitch slap companies. It's just, it can really do so much more than that. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well,
that's me.
I want to give everybody a heads up. This is a segue alert. Okay. So the segue is into social. Okay. Because we have somebody on that's going to be on, Graham, that you contacted, Marty Weatherall with Fan Chatter. And for those of you that don't know Marty, why don't you go ahead and tell about Marty and about Fan Chatter and what's going on, then we'll give him a shout.
Marty is the co-founder of Fan Chatter, which goes back to at least 2008, I believe. And in the summer of 2009, it was accepted into the Y Combinator incubator program, which is highly competitive.
I did not know that.
And he and two of his colleagues went to Mountain View for the summer, basically, to go through that program. And that was the first startup, at least from the Twin Cities, that had been accepted into that program. There was one other Minnesota company, some guys from Rochester, that had been in it a year or two before. But Marty, all this time, has kept his day job at Fallon, and I'll let him talk about that and how he came to get into the ad business. But obviously, this is one of the premier branding agencies in the country, which is on a tear again lately with new accounts and so forth. But some of the things he's doing with Fan Chatter are pretty exciting, and including a new updated version of their software, a social media aggregation service that he can tell you about, including some of the entertainment brands in particular that have been utilizing this widget, if you will, this box on their sites. So
and it's really cool, and it's going to be interesting to watch what happens during the Super Bowl with it.
Yep,
it's going to be pretty interesting. But so why don't we bring Marty in?
Yep.
I'll just give him a shout here. And the first time I met him was at Deluxe, when they were talking about what they had done for the sci-fi show Eureka. If you guys remember that.
Oh, sure.
Marty, are you on?
Hello?
Marty. Steve Borsch, Graham Thickens, Phil Wilson, Tim Elliott.
Hey, guys.
How you doing, Marty?
I'm doing great. How are you?
You're on your paternity leave, right, from Fallon. How's the baby?
I am. Well, the baby kept me up a little bit last night. So
welcome to reality, Marty.
Yeah. If I sound groggy, that's the reason. But she's great. The older one's great. They're learning how to get along. And I'm happy to be here with you guys this morning.
Yeah, fabulous. Well, it's great to have you. Tell us a little bit about your background, Marty, for those who don't know, how you started in the film business and ended up coming to Fallon, and when was that?
Well, I'm a Minneapolis kid who went out to film school at USC, so my first plan was to be a great filmmaker, and I ended up moving back from LA in the late 90s. Just to come home, and I I had been working on some film sets out there. I needed something that was, it felt like that, but back here. And very few places did, in terms of the level of, you know, film work that I'd been involved with in LA. But Fallon was doing world-class work, TV commercials, of course, you know, around the world. And so I just kept banging my fist on the door until they let me in. And, and my first life at Fallon was producing big time TV commercials, and, including some Super Bowl commercials that are talked about every year this time. And so I was a TV guy, and, I ended up leaving Fallon to direct commercials again, this, plan of mine to become a great director.
As an independent, you mean?
Yes. So I was producing as an agency producer, but I really wanted to take that next step into actually being the director of these of spots. So I chased some work around the Twin Cities for a while, and ended up, you know, deciding that I needed to create something of my own to control my own destiny a little bit, and had an idea for a TV show with a buddy of mine that I'd grown up with here. And we were just sports fans. So we created a sports fan TV show, and it was called The Show to Be Named Later. It was on public access at first, Channel 6, which is around the metro. And then we ended up on Care 11 in 2005. Mm-hmm. And we were on right after Saturday Night Live, midnight Saturday nights on Care 11. And we were just crazy fans doing anything that we thought was fun. We'd find any fan that had something interesting to say and have them on. And we were constantly poking fun at ourselves. We had bands on. We had, you know, comedy sketches. Probably the best stuff we were doing was we would just go out with a camera, and I was operating the camera, and my friend Johnny Voss was on camera, and just, you know, jump into situations, whether it was when the Wild, you know, ended their lockout, or the NHL came back. We just jump into that environment, that first game back, and just talk to people and get crazy interview footage and cut it together in a fun way and make stuff out of that. So these remote pieces were usually our best stuff. The Timberwolves hired us back during that wonderful 2003-2004 season, the best season they ever had. And we actually had behind
now
the scenes.
Now you would be gladly jumping into a win.
Yeah,
would be,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. But we were just behind the scenes fans basically during that entire season, talking to not just the players in the locker room, but the fans in the stands, and cutting it all together into these great little movies. They were called Johnny Voss Timberwolves fan movies. I always joke with my friends at Space 150. They were doing the Timberwolves site at that time. They built a custom flash player for these videos that I was making. So I'd bring my QuickTime movies in that I just cut in Final Cut, and they'd convert them into this flash player so that all, you know, so that more people could see them. Cause this was back in the days when, you know, do you have Windows Media Player? Do you have QuickTime? Whatever. And I always joke that they essentially had kind of invented YouTube, but they just had invented it for a one-off purpose, you know, this sort of flash conversion. And it takes someone to think about, hey, maybe everyone would like to be able to upload whatever video format they have into flash so that everyone could watch it. And, but anyway, I digress.
So you ended up going back to Fallon, though. You were an independent and you ended up going back, right?
Went back to Fallon. So the TV show came, you know, to an end, and knew that I needed to get back into something a little bit more, you know, structured and real. And Fallon was where I ended up. I didn't know that I'd just go back there, but that was in 2006. And I was so energized getting back into advertising, because by that time I thought, wow, everything's changed now. You know, my TV show, by the end of that, I thought, you know, this show really belongs in a scalable way on the web. And self-publishing was just becoming so apparently, you know, powerful and transformational on the web. And, so I came back with a, you know, head full of steam into Fallon thinking, you know, the world's changed. Let's go change it. This place has always, been way out in front of everything. And I found that, like any big, agency and like the industry in general, it's hard to move that fast. You know, I was out on my own just watching things happen quickly and trying to keep up the best I could. So even though I was hired to produce some more TV commercials, I just kept pushing people around trying to think about other ways that we could get messaging out for our clients. And So my role evolved quite a bit, and now I'm the director of innovation at Fallon. And I'm involved with a couple other amazing guys there, Rocky Novak and Aki Spicer. And, you know, we were asked by management, let's figure this stuff out. Let's figure out how the agency steps into the 21st century. And it's an amazing challenge, and it's interesting every day. And then I had a baby, and now I'm home for a little while.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little more specifically about what Fallon's doing in social media right now?
Well, I think you guys were talking as I was jumping on about sci-fi. You know, social is becoming a part of what all of our clients are doing, obviously. And, you know, you've got a landscape in advertising where you've got specialty agencies popping up. There were always specialty, you know, interactive agencies for the past, you know, decade or so. And so clients had these growing rosters of agencies. Now you've got social media agencies. It's our opinion, certainly my opinion, that social needs to be, you know, right there in lockstep with everything you're doing from a brand standpoint. And Fallon is a big brand agency doing the primary sort of brand defining work across the traditional channels for its clients. So we're working social much more closely into that. There are cases where we're working with partner agencies, but in other cases, we are defining the social strategy. We were way out in front with sci-fi, with the Twitter account for the character on the Eureka show. You know, we did that. We started that back in 08.
Which was awesome, by the way.
And, you know, we realized that this is a two-way medium, and others had kind of jumped in, but they weren't really responding. And we stayed in, we kept it real, and we respond to people. And Sarah on Twitter continues to be this really wonderful little thing that if you're into Eureka, you can get a lot more out of the show if you follow along.
Yeah. Well, tell us how you came to launch Fan Chatter, and when was that? And give us the quick story on that leading up to Y Combinator in 09.
Sure. It's kind of a long and winding road, but Fan Chatter is really what my TV show evolved into. And I knew there was something that needed to happen with aggregating fans. You know, that's really what we were doing with my show, but I could only find so many fans with my video camera. But I knew that fans had interesting things to say, and it was often very entertaining, and it was additive to the experience of watching sports, which is what we were focused on. And when Twitter happened very early on, I thought, you know, that's the most accessible way. You don't have to be a full-fledged blogger or be as put together as you guys are, you know, producing a podcast and, you know,
we're put together,
you know, running off to cable access and making a TV show. You know, you could just be posting your moment to moment thoughts. So I thought, you know, that's the most accessible opportunity that I've seen for everybody to really sort of, express their thoughts. And I was focused on sports at the time. So the original Fan Chatter was really a Twitter clone of sorts. It was fanchatter.com, and you could go there. You could create an account just like you could create a Twitter account. You could text in your chatter just like you could text in tweets. We thought mobility was very important because of all the fans at games that were, you know, having these things they wanted to say. So we lived in parallel with Twitter for a while, not knowing that Twitter would just sort of become the dominant force and take all the sports talk and every other kind of talk with it. And we, you know, we had photo sharing. We had some things that Twitter didn't have, and the photo sharing turned into what we do at the stadiums now. That began as a way to promote fanchatter.com. Talked with my friend over at the Gophers, Jason LaFrenz, about, hey, you know, what if we could do a Jumbotron thing where we invite fans to send pictures into our site, and working with you guys, we put them up on the Jumbotron at the Metrodome, and we reply to everybody that sends a picture that says, hey, come to our site, fanchatter.com, and, you know, create an account and become a user. That was really the beginning of our scoreboard photo sharing, you know, idea. And it was so popular that, you know, with people sending in pictures to get on the Jumbotron, we realized what we've got is a user-generated fan cam here. Right. Everyone's got a camera. Everyone's got a camera phone. Back then, I actually still had to kind of present stats to people, like, you know, X% of people, you know, have camera phones now. Now you don't even have to have that conversation. But so that actually took the focus of Fan Chatter away for a little while. We, you know, the original sort of Twitter-like site eventually was shuttered. We picked up the Twins and then the University of Oklahoma. And then we worked with Best Buy quite a bit on letting fans at games send in their own pictures so they could see themselves in the Jumbotron. And we actually had that little marketing idea for our site became our revenue model because we now could license that to teams. So it started very organically and we jumped into that world and realized there was some competition there. These people that were doing all the SMS stuff at games. But I still really, even though that took our attention away, I was fascinated by how Twitter really had become the place for sports talk, and how, you know, what Facebook was doing with status updates. And I thought, you know, there's gotta be another way to do what I had always wanted to do with my show. And what we began to do with our own sort of Twitter-like site, the original fanchatter.com. And, this vision was persistent in my mind. And, in the summer of 2009, we got accepted into Y Combinator, largely off of what we were doing with the photo sharing stuff, to be honest. And, that was our opportunity to really focus for a summer, which, you know, that's a whole other conversation. What an amazing experience that was, but
yeah,
that gave us a chance to build what is now, what we call the Fan Chatter Box, which is, you know, it's not our own site anymore. It's something that can scale out and you can put on your own site like the Timberwolves have done.
Sure. Yeah. And tell us about the recent, brands you've been working with, particularly E Online.
Sure. So E, we built this original Fan Chatter Box. It brings in all the content that's being said about your subject on the social web, brings that in and organizes that in a way that people can find it easily. If you're not a social media expert and you don't know how to really dial up your tweet deck to kind of have your real-time feeds of everything you want to know about coming in, this allows a web publisher to do that. And present whatever sort of real-time feeds of information that they want out to their visitors and allow them to sign in with Twitter and or Facebook and join that conversation right there. So we worked with the Wolves. We've been on the Wolves homepage for over a year. E called us this past fall because they were doing a Harry Potter 7 premiere live streaming event on their site. And they wanted a social chat component to that. They'd tried some other folks and hadn't been satisfied. We were just about to release our new version of the box, and we weren't even sure it was ready. And they just went ahead and put the new one in. We gave them the old one, and they grabbed the new one and put it in, and it worked great. And so they've since called us back for the Golden Globes and then the SAG Awards, and we're hoping to be working with them coming up soon with the Grammys and the Oscars.
Ooh, that would be cool.
That would be very cool. Yeah.
That's the real deal. That's the real red carpet, baby.
When I looked at your blog and saw the E Online Golden Globes video that Greg Lippman put together for the story, one of the things that I thought of was, geez, you know, Obama's State of the Union speech, the Oscars. I mean, it's all of these things where, thank God, we're still collectively putting our attention on certain things. And now with the social component, I mean, it absolutely brings everything together. It allows us to participate and connect with our social graph and focus on the event or the speech or whatever it happens to be.
Sure. The Obama thing, what Facebook did that day, you know, really kind of changed, I think, the path moving forward. You know, no matter what your subject is, you've got all this conversation scattered around Twitter and Facebook, you know, and you're not, you know, in most cases, people aren't doing anything on their own property, on their own web property, to make use of that, to leverage that. And we just, you know, think that that's what you have to do. I think, you know, the future website, I think all websites began sort of as brochureware, you know, we just did what we were doing offline. Mm-hmm. But the web has proven it's a two-way medium. It's collaborative, it's conversational. And I think, you know, the perfect use of the web and what we're trying to provide to anybody that wants it, and now anybody can have it. This new version is not cost prohibitive at all. But basically a way to grab all that stuff that's being said about you, showcase it, and invite people to participate right there without having to, you know, leave your site and go back to Twitter to tweet something. And when they do that, that actually drives more traffic back to your site.
Yeah. You can put the conversation on any site or blog. Marty and I have talked about me trying it when I'm out live blogging an event and just putting the iframe right in a blog post so people can jump right in.
Yeah. Well, and the other social benefit is if you've ever watched a game with Phil and watch him scream at the TV and then pull out his revolver and lock and load. He's already gone through half a dozen TVs, but now that he can participate socially, he's no longer doing that.
That's calmed him down a little bit.
Yeah.
I remember when John Madden retired, and I really I paused for a minute. I thought, you know, John Madden was as good as it's ever going to get at doing this color commentary. He was everyone's favorite. And, you know, now everyone's just sort of trying to do as good a job as he does. But yet, you know, we're in a different time. And now everybody on Twitter and Facebook is providing color commentary. You know, it's completely become, democratized. And, you know, if you can actually kind of tap into that a little bit, especially with football and baseball, I find football, baseball in the sports world are great because there's those built-in pauses. And, you know, I watch a Viking game this fall and look at the Vikings box I've built. And man, the game viewing experience is better. It's like the world's biggest viewing party, and you can
right.
You know, enjoy what everyone else is saying, and they all care about it as much as you do. And that, you know, that's really, I guess, the common thread of what I've been trying to do is to get people that care about the same things and want to talk about it together and in a way that who's ever providing that experience can benefit from.
Yeah, and in sports in particular, I just can't believe how Twitter has taken over the consciousness. You know, I mean, if you look at even the Star Tribune sports section over the last year or so, I mean, it's just grown into Twitter, Twitter, Twitter. I mean, every article is talking, somebody tweeted this, somebody tweeted that. You know, it's really energized sports fandom all over the place.
Well, especially once the athletes are on there too, there's been a whole lot of talk, obviously, after the NFC Championship game. I mean, you know, now fans and athletes, you know, we had great access when we were doing our Timberwolves movies. Now every fan has that access. Everybody can do an at reply to Chris Bosh or LeBron and get a reply back, you know, and you know, the Timberwolves showcase all of their Twitter players, you know, everyone that's on their team. That's on Twitter. We showcase that in one of the tabs on their fan chatter box. We've got a new tab that's up there now with the outrage about Kevin Love not making the All-Star team.
And, yeah, really.
It's very much like TweetDeck. You can just, it's very customizable, and anything that is sort of trending or you want to showcase and break out into a tab, you can do that now. So we're really proud of that. We're trying to get into a lot of people's hands.
Can you talk a little bit about metrics on your scoreboard photo sharing page? There's a SlideShare presentation that goes through some of the analytics that you've got on the back. And when I think about the box, I think about two things. If I'm online, I want to promote other shows. I want to have maybe advertisements running to maybe defray some costs and so forth. So monetization is, I guess, maybe part one of the question. But part two is it just scoreboard photo sharing that you have analytics wrapped around?
Oh, not at all.
Okay.
You know, photo sharing is, you know, we certainly have always talked about it as a really trackable in venue sponsorship opportunity. You know, whereas you could put your logo up on the fan cam and hope that X number of people were paying attention. Now we get exact numbers, how many people actually sent in pictures, how many people visited the gallery where all the pictures were after the game, how many people shared the pictures. And, you know, we get average, you know, 20 plus page views on those gallery sites just because people like to sit there and just look through all the pictures. So we've really got impressive, I think, metrics across the photo sharing app and experience that make it a premium sponsorable feature at ball games. With the box, you know, we embed that on partner sites. You know, it works really nicely on a phone as well. And so that's another thing that I think, you know, in the future, no, sites aren't going to be you know, having to struggle to look good on a phone. I think sites will be conceived of as looking good on any screen, and that's what the box is doing. But, you know, it can be embedded into a site like eSite. And so we put our own analytics tracking into the box, but we're getting all the traffic that E's getting because that's, you know, we're standing on their shoulders. So we know how many people are seeing it. And then we get our own page views within the box. And then we get our own, you know, sort of metrics of how long people are spending and how many page views and what our own kind of bounce rate is. That's an interesting stat because we're usually put on pretty busy pages. If you look at the Timberwolves homepage, there's a lot of competing stuff there. But we can get a sense of how many people that landed on that page actually did something in the box, scrolled to read more content or clicked a tab. And we do pretty well on those very busy pages. We're usually well up over 30%. Interaction rate, which, you know, for something that's competing in the way that it is, that's pretty good. And that held up with the event weekends as well. We handled 1.5 million page views actually during Golden Globe weekend. That was a big challenge. We thought how many hits can this thing really take when you build it, you know, from your, backyard of Minneapolis, you know, you're really hoping it can stand up, but, we're proud. And we think, you know, as a benefit in terms of benefit metrics, you know, when you get this kind of real-time stuff coming through your site, that's always new, that contributes to a lot more a visitor frequency. You know, people are coming back more often because your site's updated more often and, they know that that's the best place to find it.
Well, Marty, you have done an amazing job bootstrapping, innovating and bootstrapping. And this is a story that we are really wanting to follow along and see how you do going forward. So look forward to staying up to date with you.
Absolutely.
On all your new escapades with Fan Chatter.
Well, I appreciate you guys including me in this conversation. You are very well put together with this weekly production, and I appreciate all you're doing for the community here in Minneapolis and in Minnesota as well with this podcast. You shine a lot of great light on us.
Thanks Marty.
Hey Marty, hey, just before you go, just, and you didn't, you were very great about talking about the business and what it's doing and accomplishing. Are you having a good time doing all the sports stuff? Are you a sports junkie?
I've always, I made the show just so I could get, you know, in the locker room and, you know, on the court.
You're living the dream.
I got a lot of great relationships, especially here in town. So, you know, I count my contacts at all the pro teams and at the U as great friends. And they've been good to me through the years with different things that I wanted to do on my crazy TV show or whatever. And now, you know, now I'm able to help, you know, make more of their website or add a cool component to their in-game experience. And that's really gratifying, and I get to go to a lot of games, which certainly isn't bad. I wish we won more, but
there's that.
Gophers, there's a new sheriff in town. Gopher football 2011.
That's right.
Coach we're Kim. Going. We're going. We aren't going to say where we're going, but we're going to places.
Right. Well, Marty, try to get some rest today. If you can grab a nap and take care of that new baby.
Yeah, the couch is calling right now.
But. Exactly. Right, this is the great thing about paternity leave. You can actually say, I'm going to take a nap now.
Ain't it great? Hey, thanks a lot, Marty.
Thanks, Marty.
Thank you, guys. Have fun.
Bye now. Well, that was great.
Yeah, we could go on and on. I mean, this guy is amazing. And what I wonder is, you know, is he going to come to the point where the business takes off? And he's going to have to quit the day job. I mean, you know, he loves both things so much, you know, it's like, it's got to be unbelievable to even fathom doing both at the same time, you know,
but a lot of things can happen. He can end up having somebody run it. You know, as soon as I started looking at this too, is I immediately saw phenomenal opportunity for a mobile app that, cause I would love to have upcoming events that are Fan Chatter driven in an app. And I could, you know, sit down to watch the Academy Awards and go, oh my God, there's a Fan Chatter, event. And I could just pull it up in the Fan Chatter app and participate, or, you know, Obama's going to give a speech, or, You know, Michelle Bachman is doing her clown makeup and doing her rebuttal, and I could watch her and people could chat about it, you know.
Yeah, and the chatter was unbelievable prior to the event. I mean, yeah. I obviously tracked along closely on the Golden Globes thing, and disclosure, I was helping him with PR, but it was unbelievable, the chatter that, you know, like 2 days before. And, you know, it just intensified as it got closer to the actual red carpet event.
Yeah, yeah. Well, guys, we're going to have to wrap up here, and we're not going to be able to get to our future of newspapers discussion, unfortunately.
Oh, it's okay. I think we'll live.
But just briefly on upcoming events, Wednesday, February 23rd is going to be hot. There's going to be a 2011 Nonprofit Tech and Communications Conference. Mojo Minnesota is having this tech transfer event. And then Cloud Camp MSP 2011 is going on. And then
it's all on the same day, did you say?
It's all on the same day.
Now, oh, my gosh.
Now, I think Mojo's at like 4 o'clock and Cloud Camp's in the evening at 6 or something. But I'll put the links in the show notes, except Cloud Camp doesn't have a link yet. But then what happens on March 19th again, Phil?
Gosh, what is that? That's something big.
Would that be the expanded event?
Yes, that would be the expanded.
That's the 18th.
Oh, and by the way, it's expanded.
You know, I think, you know what I really want to drive home in that point is that we've expanded Mobile Mart.
There we go.
That was so funny.
A little joke between Graham and I.
The news release. Yeah. It said expanded in the headline and expanded in the subhead.
I got to go back and look at the subject line. I'll have to go back and look at that.
Damn rewrites.
And then the overnight website challenge. Tim, is the team together?
Pretty much. We've got a few more slots that we're filling. We've got plenty of people that have volunteered, though. So we're just kind of going through and making some last minute decisions.
So
we should have that fully formed by Monday.
Is deodorant high on the criteria list?
No, not at all.
All right.
So we're just looking for some good designers and user interface folks and, you know, that kind of thing.
Got it. All right. Another show's in the can. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, gents.
Have a good week.
You too.
See you guys.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Baila, amigo, se prendió esta vaina. Yo estoy seguro que se llena esto. Me ha tocado de pie porque casi no hay puesto. Y es que desde el lunes que pensaba en ello. Si está puro desorden, amigos, y el resto. Y es que no sé qué pasa, pasa con mis pies. Cuando empieza el pasa, pasa, el piso se mueve. Y es que no sé qué pasa, pasa con mis pies. Hey, DJ, dale de nuevo.
baila.